it's not good.
Nice plug. Okay, so I talked to you, so let's get to the most fundamental question. So where we are in the crypto evolution. Right now we can play the Gartner's tech hype cycle. If you can see on the TV screen here, just a very simple question. So each of you, you know the Gartner's tech hype cycle chart, right, graph. So where do you think, where we are right now for crypto assets? So you can see that, there is the triggering, technology trigger and peak of inflated expectations, trough of disillusionment and slope of enlightenment and plateau of productivity. So where do you think we are? Very quickly, Jianguo.
First of all, I think the chart quite biased. If you see the peak in there, then it's basically saying,
it's mostly for the trend.
I think most of the chart I see is kind of go lower than kind of keep going at forever. I think to look at this and just put that in crypto, it's probably not fair. I think it's kind of overlapping. For example, you can look at payment and you look at dApps and the different technologies. So there's big blockchain 1.0, 2.0, 3.0.
Sure.
So I think maybe for Bitcoin, it's more towards later, but for dApps, it's probably in the earlier stage. For example, DPoS,
okay,
it's not even online yet, so it's probably in the early part. So you really need to look into what exactly is.
Differentiating
different
types of
technology.
Okay. Michael?
It's definitely simplification, but I think this chart is interesting because, in trading, we know, different the chart of different time frames resemble each other, right? And I think it's the same thing. On one hand, if you map the Bitcoin price or whatever other major price, you'll probably say, we just passed the stage of trough of disillusion and going up again, right? But if you really look at the very long term, I agree with Jimbo. I think the whole space is just in the beginning, so probably on the most left part of this curve, and we're just seeing the beginning of this space.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that maybe I talk more about the market cycle. Yeah, the graph is a little odd. I think for Bitcoin, you are seeing a bit of a plateau there. From what we're looking at on the screen there, but overall, I think from an actual market cycle perspective, between accumulation up to the peak through distribution through the down moves, I think. Once again, like Michael said, it all really is determined by the actual time frame that we're looking at. And of course, in crypto, everyone has different time frames. People are in a 10-year play, which is extremely long in this market, but people are in a 10-day play. So, for myself, considering that a distribution part of the cycle would be sort of where people are starting to actually capitulate and leave the market and sort of capture gains that they had previously engaged in. I would say, on a more micro scale, I'd say we're still in the accumulation phase for sure, but maybe on a more wider, broader base macro, we'd say more in a distribution phase.
Okay, so then let's look at the investable universe of crypto assets. There are over 1,500 coins, hundreds of ICOs completed last year, and probably hundreds this year already. It's a little bit overwhelming, if you have to follow everything, screen everything. So for you guys, what for each of you, what are the universe or the core assets you're looking at?
I think that's pretty straightforward for us. We're trading liquid assets only. If we sort of see these new entrants into the market, regardless of the product or idea that they're actually trying to put forth, it's all about the liquidity for us as a trading desk. That being said, from an OTC standpoint, I think, OTC used to represent in traditional spaces illiquid assets. So people could actually gain access to a marketplace in an illiquid asset they could not get normally. So I think from a token perspective or these new coins or even just the old coins that are sort of resurfacing as a player and added attention, we're generally looking at more liquid coins. As far as what type of projects and ideas that these tokens or sort of bringing to the market. That's also important to us as well. We're not necessarily facilitating deals in coins that we don't deem worthy of doing a trade in, regardless of the liquidity. So I think that there's a bit of a ethical issue as far as what we trade as well.
Okay, I guess this question is more for Michael, as you're the trading house here.
Sure. I mean, for us, I mean, yeah, actually, I mean, I echo a lot of what Ryan says. Liquidity is a very, very important for us. I mean, if you look at this space, right, the total market cap of all tokens now is probably, what, like 270 billion-ish, right? And about half of that is Bitcoin alone. And you have another 50 billion in Ether. So with these two, right, with the top two, you probably have like almost two-thirds of the total market cap, right? And also that's where most of the liquidity is for, you know, so similar to Ryan and high frequency trading shop like ourselves, right? We really care about the liquidity, and that's where most of our trading volume happens, concentrated really on the top two, or at most go down to maybe the top five or top eight. But this space is evolving very fast. Last year, if you look at the top 10, the board looks quite different from this year, right? And I expect this board to continue to change. At some point, maybe, that's probably a little bit more distant down the road, Bitcoin could get off, the throne and become, no longer the largest token, right? That could happen as well. So, for us, on one hand, our trading right now, for our asset management program, it concentrates really on the top tokens. But at the same time, the top tokens can change, and we'll continue to watch the board, watch which tokens, have deeper liquidity and more trading opportunities, and at some point, it can potentially be included in our trading pool. But at the same time, because we also provide trading services to a lot of the token projects, so we actually, get exposure to these, what we call alts, alternative tokens, or smaller tokens as well. And what I would say is, last year, there were a lot of them raised a lot of money, and this year, it's a bit tougher, but there are still a lot of new projects, new ICOs. Some of them probably won't succeed and survive down the road, but they are right.
I think actually for 2017, over half of those ICOs actually failed, or even a higher ratio.
Fail is, it's still too soon to say anyone failed yet, as long as they haven't burned all the money they've raised, right, which hopefully, none of them did. Some of those projects, on the other hand, they actually have really good roadmap, really good teams, and I think they will evolve and go through this bear circle for now. And who knows, one day, they will become a top 10 token, or even become a very liquid token, and high frequency trading shops like ourselves, or OTC traders like Octagon will start trading them too.
So the question about the token comment.
Actually, I'm not sure if it's relevant for you. It's more from, if you're an investor.
From investor, okay. I think that's probably more relevant because these guys don't take directions. Usually, like millisecond-wise, they probably do. I think within the crypto space, I think there are two sectors probably is undervalued relatively within the crypto space. One is for decentralized exchange, of course, because I'm here. On top of that, I think putting an analogy, so downloading music, right? So we used to have Napster, then Napster got shut down, then we didn't stop downloading music, we have BitTorrent now, right? So I think the same process probably what goes through for the crypto trading. That's one logic. I don't know when that's going to happen, but I think in the general trend, I think we're going towards that kind of line. Second is, if crypto asset by itself is focused on decentralization, would it make sense to trade it at a centralized place, to think about it logically? If once this technology is ready, I think to decentralize trading something, represent decentralization, would probably make more sense. So that's my comment on decentralized exchanges. You guys can take a look at it in that space. They are relatively small. I think for the decentralized exchange, total market cap, if they still go below, say, $50 billion, which is CME's market cap, before that, I think a lot of people should do that, and I don't know who's going to succeed, but that's a space to watch. Second is those anonymous tokens. I think there is a big misunderstanding out there. I think Bitcoin means being anonymous. It's not. It's worse than being just publicly let people know what you have, because everyone has the same data. Once anyone got associated with an address, then you're done for life. Like, it's just, it will link to you from all the payments. And some people have developed technology even to link IP address to certain addresses. I think, but it's misunderstood. Lots of people with big money say like, oh, I put in Bitcoin, that's anonymous. But it's not, it's far worse than put money in the bank. So there are technologies such as NZ Snark. So there are technologies that build the total anonymous tokens. I think a lot of people, especially for whatever usage, legally, illegally, a lot of work goes through that. Currently, all the anonymous tokens probably get only around $5 billion, whereas Bitcoin is $100 billion, and not to mention the Bitcoin Cash and as such. So take a look at that, see if you can figure out if you like it or not. I think it makes a lot of sense.
I can definitely see where you're coming from. That's a point we probably will address a little bit later. Now, I want to get to the drivers that's going to drive the market direction in the future. So before this panel, I talked to each of you. One of the main factors definitely is regulation, obviously. But another factor is institutional adoption of the asset class. So I wonder, from where you sit, each of you, how are you observing the institutional adoption of crypto asset right now, and what's your outlook?
Yeah, I think it's a two-pronged question, because the regulatory environment is sort of going to be a very important piece of how the market is impacted and how institutions actually get involved. We've been saying it for a long time, institutions are coming. It's taking a little bit longer than it should, to be honest. And I think it really has a lot to do with the environment around it, potential custody of assets, which is a huge play this year. I think that's the theme of 2018, actually. The driver is definitely going to be this institutional play. But like I said, we've been saying that for a while. So how do we sort of break free of that and actually see real growth outside of that? It is going to be that the regulations around it, it is going to be core competencies around the technology, including security and that custody aspect.
But let's look at long term, okay? So if we say in the next 5 years, that's like really long in crypto world, in 5 years time, right now global financial assets stood around $300 trillion. If you have a ratio like 5% or 2%, what's a percentage you think perhaps in 5 years will be in crypto? I think that's a major driver, if you have any predictions, you're looking at me like I'm crazy.
What's the price of Bitcoin going to be? This is a similar prediction that's
yeah,
asked every other day.
I know.
I don't know. This is a tough one. 10%? I don't know. It's tough to say. It's definitely a $1 trillion market. I think everyone agrees on that. But how far above that and to what extent is debatable? 10%, I'd say. But it really does come down to the regulatory environment, security around it, custody, financial products built around it, ETFs, options on futures, other futures products. So there's a lot of things that need to work out for this to come through.
Okay, Michael?
Yeah, first on that number, it's hard to pinpoint. I'll probably guess in a similar neighborhood as Ryan does, but talking about, regulation and the institutional coming, I think one thing interesting to observe is, the three of us here who sit on stage today, we actually all came from the traditional Wall Street and we all worked at investment banks and hedge funds. Last year, if you get three speakers, especially early last year, you get three speakers on a crypto event, maybe you get, very different people. 2 years ago, you probably hardly can find many people from traditional finance background in this space, right? So definitely the people are moving. The people who have institutional background, who have more professional financial background, are coming to the space. And I think that's going to be followed by the institutions themselves entering the space. We already started to see that. some of you sitting here come from big traditional financial institutions, and you are learning the space, and probably some of you already participate in the space, even on the institutional level. So I think things can evolve very, very fast, and you know, I think at some point the regulators are already doing a lot, because they realize they cannot leave the space unregulated. You know, it's already past the point of inflection that you no longer can just ignore it or ban it. So you have to regulate it if you have the government or regulation. So I think this can happen very, very quickly before we know it. I mean, this space can become, you know, crypto gonna become a very standard asset class. A lot of big institutions are gonna play it.
Okay, Jianbo, have anything to add?
Yeah, sure. So I think number one is the safety issue. So still, like, I think lots of banks, they are actually building their own wallet, which is kind of normal. Like, for this kind of, if you have every institution building their own wallet, that is a problem for institution adoption. Like, first, you don't have the money and the input to do that by yourself. Second, you don't know which one to choose. So I think that problem needs to be solved, and a lot of people are solving it. So for example, for our exchange, we use kind of what it is. So basically, you can do like, the technology basically is put a private key into seven pieces, and put a seven piece, every then you pick two pieces randomly into the hardware. It's a USB driver, and any of the four keys out of seven, once plugged into the same dock, then you can put payment through, because that's enough keys. Otherwise, you cannot. And the key will never go leave the USB driver, so you actually can go in to find it. So it's a bank grade. So this kind of technology, us, and I'm sure there's probably 100 teams out there trying to build that. Once there's enough of that, get involved, and the insurance people looking into that thing is legit, then you will pass through. I think security is a big thing. Before that, auditing a lot of stuff, it's just impossible to start. But you don't know how to access that. And in terms of, like, I think the question about how the big market cap or things will go, I think short-term prediction is always difficult. Like, I talked about logic. So think this way. Think in the past 10 years, look at the biggest company that went up the most, the Alibaba, the Amazon, everything. Why did they go up? Well, they made more money. But I think the most reason they went up because they have accumulated so much data. The money is really on the data, not on the earning. And people believe those data will generate future earnings. And they're just growing bigger and bigger. Look at Amazon getting into the movie industry and everything because they have the data. And people think they will keep accumulating more data at zero cost. And my personal belief, of course I'm biased, I think to deal with data economy, to have the right ecosystem, you have to put on blockchain. So people who generate data should be rewarded and they can sell those data. That will be the terminal ways to generate and manage data. From that perspective, if I happen to be right or close to be right, then I would say like if the entire equity space now, let's call it 30% of value is on data, right? Take that half into blockchain, then you can come up with something like 15% of equity valuation will eventually go to blockchain. So then global equity is like 40 trillion, something like that. So you come up, end up a number around like $6-7 trillion, probably in a 10-year space. That's how I think about it.
Ryan and Michael, you have anything to add, or do you agree? No? Okay. So I think Jianbo raised an interesting question, which is, you know, how do you securely store your and your client's crypto assets? And so, Ryan?
Yeah, I think you know, there's a lot of techniques that have been sort of created and have been evolving. They're evolving every day, and they should be, because if you don't adapt or evolve, you're going to die in this industry very quickly. So, you know, I think it comes down to simple wow phrases you've heard before: 2FA, multi-sig, cold storage. It's all very important. I think a lot of people sort of overlook the importance of it, because those techniques that need to be used by a company or a service or an exchange, or maybe not a decentralized one, but a centralized exchange, it actually requires a lot of work to do that. And it's a full-time job of more than one person to
actually
implement.
Could you explain the method you just described, just, you know, a little bit in detail?
But the WoW words I'm saying, or the 2FA. So, cold storage, I think what most people know is just straight off the bat, when you're working with different types of digital wallets, you have hot and cold wallets, and anyone who runs a company that cares about people's assets or their own, they will operate, I would say 99%+ of their assets on a cold storage solution, meaning it is not connected to the internet, and it never has, and it never will be. So when you're actually running an exchange and you go and you deposit Bitcoin or any other crypto, and then you go to withdraw it, that is actually coming from a hot wallet. So that wallet enables transactions to seamlessly move in and out of the network. If it's in a cold wallet or a storage solution, then it will not move. So I think there's a convenience versus security factor, and most people don't get that, and they don't care about it. They just want their coins now. So I think anyone who runs a business, that cares about security, there's always this internal debate around, how do we secure things and make people happy at the same time? So it's usually not possible, actually. So.
What about Michael?
So you see, I'm actually gonna, break the bad news about, the industry now. Is at the moment, I don't think there's a perfect solution for security yet. The infrastructure is just not there. I mean, custodian solutions are barely there. There are some attempts, but I don't think even they are, widely adopted yet. We are still waiting for, the more big traditional banks or, the larger traditional institutions to enter the space to really provide, the most widespread custodian solutions. And as of for now, as Ryan said, it's a trade-off. It's a trade-off if you store it in cold storage or cold wallet, you cannot trade it actively. And for high-frequency traders like us, we turn over our portfolio so much that we have to, store them in hot wallet. And at the same time, that's why, we, as a trader, any trader in the space, you're taking counterparty risk against the exchange trade-off. That's why, for people come from, for people like ourselves who really value, risk management and care about, counterparty risk, we don't trade it, with smaller exchanges. We, most of our, LP, our assets, are traded in really the largest exchanges in this space. Doesn't mean, they have no counterparty risk, but in the end of the day, that's why we always educate our investors. And a lot of them come from this space, so they understand that, if one of those, top five exchange really have an issue and they go down, right? That's a risk we cannot control right now, but that's also really a systematic risk for this whole space. I mean, there are people working on alternative solutions such as GMO, the decentralized exchanges, try to eliminate that, or to some extent reduce the counterparty risk of the centralized exchanges. Right now, the largest exchanges are all centralized, but at the same time, the trade-off is, again, efficiency. I mean, for, professional traders or, especially quantitative traders, it's nearly impossible yet to trade on decentralized exchanges just because things are so slow. So again, there's no perfect solution at the moment. I've got to be honest about it.
Well, that's much appreciated. Jianbo, you have anything to say what Michael just said?
We probably can handle like 30 trades per second right now, and there's lots of plugin that cannot do, like we cannot allocate 30 trades to the professional guys, right? But we do also have a solution for that. We're working on at the end of the year, I think we'll probably be 100 times faster. But the question is more on safety, right?
I think
we are heading there. Just the first stuff I mentioned about the, so think about the USB, right? In China, a bank, you put in USB, then you can sign those operations, and you plug it out, and you cannot. So those keys are stored hardware in the USB, and you will never go to, literally you cannot get it out. You can only stand in, say, please sign. Then I forgot it's plugged in, then it's possible to sign, otherwise it's impossible. So I think the technology is there, just need more guys to get their head around it. Like, I think there are lots of big, also big equity firms. I think in Japan especially, I think maybe even Amazon, they are planning to do something. I think they do have a lot of resources and could go verification and get lots of resources to talk to insurance company and everything to present it. I think we will get there. And the technology is already, I think it's almost ready, because within the bank, it's more or less the same thing, right? I mean, in bank, you still use passwords. It's private key is kind of just another form of password, maybe a little bit longer. But I just need, I think we just need to, everyone try their own solution to get there. The main problem I have now is, for example, we are doing exchange, so we need to do a lot of tokens, is that maybe you have the perfect solution for Bitcoin, but that does not apply to other tokens, because it's just different technology. So every single token, you develop something new, verify, that takes a little bit of time.
So another factor, regulation, we didn't really, you know, we touch on it, but I want to get your perhaps a little bit more comprehensive views on regulatory changes or outlook. I know it's difficult, you know, to predict regulatory policies, but you know, what are some regulatory aspects you're paying close attention to that you think will drive the market in the future?
Sure. So I think I mean, one thing is I think the I actually think it's a two way. I look at this issue from two different angles, right? On one hand, you know, the regulations are definitely coming. Regulators around the globe are working on how to regulate this new market that's going to be gigantic at some point, right? On the other hand, I think what's nice to see is the industry players start to self-regulate. So hopefully, you know, the industry and the regulation can be somewhere in the middle, right? But for example, you know, as I mentioned, more and more professional institutions or people from more professional backgrounds are entering into this asset class, and you know, we care about things like security and etc., right? So that's why, you know, for example, we've been working with, you know, different exchanges, you know, different wallet providers to think about, you know, how to, you know, at least propose potential solutions to, you know, custodian solutions and all that, right? And on the other hand, you know, this kind of thing is gonna feed to the regulators, right? Because they talk to the significant players in this space. They are learning about the space, you know, they're trying to come up with ways to regulate it, but they have to learn what's it about first, right? And I think this is a really positive feedback cycle, because, you know, the industry doing something, the regulators recognize it, and they try to, you know, try to design regulations that make sense. But, you know, if the market goes the other way, the market doesn't, you know, the players doesn't want to self-regulate, they just want to grab all the money that's on the table right now, then it's going to look very bad in the eyes of regulators, and the regulators are going to become very harsh on the whole industry, right? So while I cannot predict exact timeline of regulation schemes, but my sense is, you know, it's actually, I feel it's a lot more friendly than what people expected last year, just because the industry started to self-regulate.
Ryan, do you agree?
Yeah, I think anyone who cares about, you know, their own assets, his customers' assets, their name, their brand has been self-regulating in some way for a while now. And I know we have as a group for 5 years. We actually took the lead in Hong Kong to provide and sort of institute KYC and AML procedures when other exchanges were not. Granted, there were only a few, most of them were in China at the time, but there were a few players here in Hong Kong and no one was really doing it. And it could be a slight detriment to the business because it does turn people away. You know, crypto is supposed to be this anonymous thing. Why do I need to give you my ID? Well, tough luck, this is the way it works. This is the industry we're building. It is a professional, institutional grade industry that's being built, and this is the foundation that needs to be laid. As far as particular regulation, and sure, I think it's more so jurisdictional, because each jurisdiction is going to have its own way of regulating and sort of putting forth these policies and, you know, and penalizing people who don't comply. So that being said, I do think there will be a global umbrella that people will sort of fall under, or a framework, as you may call it. Then as far as different tokens, so sure, ICOs will be regulated differently than other long-standing cryptos that are already around. So projects where people entrusted, being entrusted with people's investment funds and hard-earned money, then sure, a lot of regulation needs to be built around that. I think it's happening right now already, and hopefully sooner than it seems it is.
Let me ask you specifically about Know Your Customer. You know, in this aspect specifically, you know, what are your outlook for maybe, you know, different countries in Asia? You know, anything particular that you think you know, are in the works that, you know, perhaps changes will be made in particular countries?
I mean, the policies. I think Korea and Japan are at the forefront of that. You know, admittedly, Hong Kong is a bit behind. Hong Kong has always been a sort of a reactionary place in the world. You know, the U.S. does this, the Hong Kong does it. So I hope they break free from that soon enough, because Hong Kong is sort of being, you know, put on a pedestal as far as, you know, a lot of ICOs did raise money here. A lot of trading companies have been opening recently. There is a lot of money here. Everyone knows that. So I think, you know, from a regulatory standpoint and, you know, involving the KYC AML aspect of it all, you know, I still think that, you know, countries such as Korea and Japan are at the forefront. Countries such as Southeast Asia and Southeast Asia and whatnot are way behind, to be honest.
Tianbo, you have anything to add to the regulatory changes?
Yeah, sure. The thing about regulation now is, I think if you really look deep into it, think about regulation, it's country, usually country by country, or a few country together. But being country means it's a geographic definition. But the problem with crypto is that it doesn't quite fit into the geographic definition. It's in the cyberspace. So of course people who own it, it's geographically, they're here. So I think probably at the end, the formal regulation will be quite different. Maybe it's something more suitable to the asset class, because in the cyberspace, maybe it's some sort of cyber regulation or something. I cannot imagine at the moment yet. And also, another part of it is regulation won't be even. Think about it, right? For example, US and China, they do a lot of things about it. They have different departments on it. Why you have small countries like Malta and some northern Africa countries and also Gibraltar? Because they suit perfectly for having that digital business, a digital economy within that, and help all the people who want to do those business within there. I cannot see a very clear way to stop that from happening. So if you do that, say yes, no, that, no, what ends up happening is not that they just stop, they just move to the place. Like in Binance, I think they will have a big presence in Malta, because they cannot do in China, they cannot do in Japan, probably Taiwan say no too, so they just moved there. And for the user perspective, they didn't really see any change, because it's all in cyber. So they need to come up together, and you need to face that different entities have different interests, and some entities, some countries, they even just want to just fully embrace it, because otherwise they cannot be part of it. So there's a dynamic of that. So I think at the end, the regulation probably is something that maybe all the projects come together to put some money into a regulation, more proper cyberspace regulation, rather than say, hey, trust, US will do the right thing, just follow. The logic just doesn't follow. It's a difficult problem to solve. Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about some, you know, big picture things, and I think some of the audience here probably come, you know, wanting to get a little bit insights on your, you know, this expert's opinion on specific crypto assets, you know, some tokens or Bitcoin and all that. So maybe we can just, you know, by show of hands, if, you know, people here who have bought into crypto, could you raise your hands, please, so we can see, you know, like. Pretty much everybody here have bought into crypto, and so maybe you know, you have traded in this asset class for a long time. So we're, you know, where we are right now after the big drop from December, the peak of December 2017. You know, for right now, where do you see some, you know, good opportunities or good tokens and coins? question asked.
Okay, sure. Well, actually, I mentioned two things already, right? The centralized exchange and the anonymous tokens and the logic. So I do encourage everyone to look at that and find logic. To me, it's not really, I think the logic is very important. And the same logic will have different results over time also. So if you don't grasp logic, then you will just get lost. So let me give an example. Like, actually, I learned it the hard way about Ethereum. So last year, around, I think when we started raising money, it's probably around 400 US. Then we finished raising money, it's around like 500 or something like that. Then it went all the way up to like 1400. Then that time, with my limited understanding, I thought, because of course dApps is coming out, so a chain that supports dApps will be doing very great, fundamentally everything. But at the end, this year you look at it, and it dropped all the way back to 400. Then I really thought about it, it's like, oh, what really happened is around end of last year, when we were raising money, there was hundreds, thousands of projects raising money too. So at the moment, if you want to raise money to invest in project, you have to buy Ethereum. That's exactly why what really happened. Lots of investors bought Ethereum with their fiat or whatever to invest in those projects. When that hump goes through, then on the way down, it's basically people who raise Ethereum, the projects, including me, we need to raise fiat to pay salaries and to developers. Then we just sell all the way down. So it's still really no fundamental there. It's just a big hump of flow. So just trying to understand the dynamics. It's in the long run, everyone thinks, most people probably agree that it's bright, but you have to look in the details, and things change so fast. So be detailed. You think fundamental, think long run, also think short run, what's really happening, and have a grasp, especially the fund flow, and think, look at that, it matters. And into more detail, I think I want to mention something about consensus. So my personal view is that DPoS is a very strong consensus that no one can really ignore, and it's emerging. So EOS will come online around June, so that's the biggest support of DPoS algorithm. My personal view is that DPoS probably will be one of the dominating algorithms, if it is not the dominating algorithm, that will link blockchain to users. Basically, you need to develop legit dApps that people can use, not just if someone does do a crypto CAD, then you just shut down, right? And it's like, boss, sorry, there's a CAD over there. Let's work, try to get it work tomorrow, right? You cannot do that. So you need the speed. I think DPoS probably will pump out 1,000 to 10,000 in this year. I think it's good enough for people to have legit applications, not high frequency trading probably, but something that works, right? So look at those dApps. Look at DPoS consensus algorithm. See what projects using it, and do you agree with my logic that DPoS works? Of course, there's drawbacks, like more centric and whatever.
Thank you, Tempo. I think that's very clear. Michael?
Yeah, I mean, for me, how I look at this is trading is always difficult. Whether it be cryptocurrency or equities, right? Equity has been there around for hundreds of years, but you know, picking the right stock is still difficult. So, you know, I mean, it's the same thing a lot of times, you know, Jinbo is an expert in this space, really understand the backbone of the technology, but still somehow got the trade wrong last year, right? So it is really difficult, that's my point. But you know, what can you do if you don't know which stock to pick? You pick the index, right? You pick the leaders, because you know, even if you might not pick the one that rallies the most, when the space really grows, at least you can ride the growth. So, you know, for me, it's very simple. I would buy the top tokens, buy Bitcoin, buy Ethereum, keep it simple. And, you know, that's why also, you know, our asset management products are denominated in Bitcoin and in Ethereum, because that's for people who, you know, want to really grow, enjoy the growth of the space, and at this time, you know, enjoy the extra yield from trading in it. I would say, you know, and another thing is really, you know, a lot of times, you know, to really become an expert or a good investor in any space takes a lot of thinking, a lot of energy, a lot of studying. So, you know, like Jinbo clearly spent a lot of time understanding the fundamental logic and all that, right? And but at the same time, you know, maybe the easiest thing is, you know, leave things to the hands of the professionals. If you want to invest in early stage, leave it to, you know, the good VCs that are already in the space. if you want a secondary market exposure, you know, you can invest in professional funds like ourselves, right?
Okay, thank you, Michael. Ryan?
Yeah. So wait, you said EOS is going to 10,000?
No, no.
Oh, sorry. Okay. I was about to go online, man. No. Okay. No, I think what Michael said is a pretty good idea too for people. You know, it's more of a passive investment versus active. So putting an index play on is a pretty easy way to sort of capture gains in a bull market. Although in a bear market, I don't think anything survives the apocalypse, which we saw. Yeah, all right, Amber AI survived. Yeah, Octagon survived too. So, I think, you know, for individual plays, I think it is keep it simple. You know, that there's a lot of good coins out there too. Even I mean, a lot of it's debatable, though. You could talk about, you know, good projects, good teams behind it, solid capital raise, technology is rock solid, yet the thing fails. It's really just a product of the environment, really. But that being said, I think, you know, EOS is an interesting name out there now as well. Cardano as well, although it's debatable. A lot of people sort of don't like it. But it does have a little bit of a bull rush coming. I think some of us sort of see that. Then the mainstays, the top six or seven coins by market cap, and I think overall top 20. But the index play is a smart way for people not to get truly burned on a particular name. That and as well as getting involved in different fund plays. And there's a lot out there. I think 250 or so now.
Thank you. I want to just open up for questions. I mean, I still have a lot more questions, but I want to make this interactive. I know, you know, the space, there are so many topics we need to cover, but we just cover the basics. And if anybody, you know, have specific questions, we can, okay, this gentleman, maybe you just have to speak very loudly.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask Michael, the traditional exchanges tend to sort of bend over back.
I think the top exchanges all realize, you know, a lot of the institutions are entering the space and are at least making preparations for it. You know, I don't know if it's a good idea to mention specific exchanges, but I would say, you know, the really look at the top ones, right? And I think they are moving, or at least pushing efforts towards that direction. Some of them have, you know, better APIs, so work better for, you know, quant guys like ourselves. And some are still working on it. But, you know, at the same time, I would say, you know, it's actually, yeah, as you said, it's still different from the traditional assets where, you know, really the exchanges try to make it friendly, make it efficient for the professionals. In this space, right, for the exchanges, the easiest money to be made is still from, you know, retail participations, right? So I'm not saying, as I said, the top guys are probably working hard to expand the market to professionals. I think the lower tier exchanges are probably, you know, targeting the retail first and, you know, might not even appreciate, you know, guys like ourselves to participate first because, you know, in the end of the day, right, to be honest, we make money because the market is inefficient. And the market is inefficient because, you know, the retail behavior sometimes, you know, generate mispricings. And we take advantage of that. And so for the small exchanges that just want to attract a lot of retail participations to start with, they might want to see a lot of mispricing or inefficiency that last in the exchanges. So the incentive is actually against opening up, say, you know, API infrastructure for professional guys like ourselves.
Thank you, Michael.
This
gentleman, please.
To piggyback on that, what are you guys seeing in terms of compression of spreads and basically clearance times?
Yeah, that's a great question because you know, if you look at last year, it was pretty amazing in August or in September, even in December, right? You actually have a lot of guys who just sit in front of their computer manually arbing the price difference between different exchanges, and they can make a lot of money by doing very simple things: buy low, wire over, sell high. It's as simple as that. This year, if you look at the major exchanges, you know, the small exchanges can still have premiums, or, you know, exchanges, say in Korea or right now in India, have you know, premiums because of, you know, the capital control, different issues, right? But the major mainstream exchanges, the ones with, you know, pretty much similar low counterparty risk, the spreads are gone most of the time. Why? Because there are a lot of quant guys like ourselves who are arbing the spreads, and you know, now it's become quite competitive. Before, you can really, you know, visually see a 20% spread, and it will be there waiting for you to manually arb it. Now the spread goes, you know, anything just above transaction cost, and also, you know, our transaction cost is a lot lower because our volume is a lot larger. So just when the spread just goes above, you know, our transaction cost, it's gone, right? So it's really the participation of professionals that tighten the spread.
Have you also seen that same tag along effect on basically turnaround times for retail entry and exits because of the liquidity you're providing?
Yeah. So I mean the liquidity we are providing, you know, and also, you know, for the OTC guys on the octagons providing tremendous liquidity. So the space is getting, but you know, the volume shrank a bit because it's a bear market. But otherwise, I think, you know, considering, you know, the overall trading interest really, you know, decreased a little bit this year because of the price. But then, you know, taking that into fact, the liquidity is improving. Yeah.
This gentleman, please.
So you made an interesting point earlier that a lot of the custody solutions just aren't there yet to make it worthwhile. You know, there's a lot of new entrants to the space, and it's kind of hard to differentiate between them. And perhaps Ryan can weigh in on this stuff as well. What are you guys looking for when you see a new custody solution, and how does that factor into, you know, maybe a hot wallet is not the best way to do it, but if costs were minimized to a certain level or if the technology was there, like, what do you find lacking?
Probably just multiple options. So I think everyone is sort of forced to, you know, put that square piece in that circle hole, you know, to sort of make things work, and it should not be that way. I think from a technology standpoint, that's sort of what Michael and Jimon said, it's I don't think it's there either. You know, there's a lot of missing pieces. I think from, you know, our own solutions and whatnot that we've been running for years, and these guys as well, you know, we have that nailed down. But as far as how to sort of, you know, let that evolve into a greater product and a much larger product and more widespread, and to sort of ensure the safety and enable people to enter the market in a more confident manner, I think we're still a whiles away. Even though I did say this year, I think, is the year of the custody. So also the year of the DEX and the year of the stablecoin too. I think we're still a little whiles away. I think, you know, there's a couple of decent solutions coming out now, but none of them are really truly public. There's actually one in like Kentucky in the States, and it's actually huge. It's called. It's tied into some other previously well-known wallet providers such as like BitGo. So I think maybe sort of, you know, enabling or bringing to market these companies that have the experience, that have the technical aptitude to actually deliver a product that's actually going to work, and of course not be susceptible to any hacks or whatnot, and then that's when we truly get over the hump. Unfortunately, we actually need to see it work first before people actually get to that point where they do trust it.
Great. Any other questions? This gentleman, please.
I guess for Michael, it seems that most of the trading strategies are long-only. So what would need to happen to be able to short some of these cryptocurrencies, like in terms of getting volumes up? What kind of time frame?
I mean, for the majors, there are already futures or margin trading on some of the large exchanges, so you can actually go short even through futures or through margin. But for the odds, you know, if it's a short bull, I think a lot of people would do that, a lot of the project tokens. But I mean, in the end of the day, shorting requires borrowing, right? Who's gonna lend you those tokens when they kind of, you know, don't even want to hold it themselves, right? So that's the difficulty. I mean, But I mean, the space is evolving. I think, you know, all the things that are there in equities or in commodities eventually will be there. So I think it just takes time. And also, you know, this space right now is very top heavy, right? So a lot of people, I mean, even for the exchanges, that don't think it's worthwhile to develop some solution for the smaller tokens or smaller projects, because, you know, most of the volume still happen on the top 10, right? So why bother?
And actually, I think it just shows how unsophisticated the market's been. You know, there's actually been very large players or holders of coins, multiple ones, who have actually sort of created, I don't know if you're from equities, but more of like a stock locate program, which is huge in banks. And people dial up and they say, you know, I want to borrow, you know, X amount of shares of Apple, and then if it runs out for the day, you can't have it anymore. And you need to pay for that on a daily basis. So you need to return it at the end of the day. So it's similar in crypto, where there's actually been some really big players who've sort of, in an unsophisticated manner, said, you know, you message them on Skype and say, you know, I want to borrow, you know, 5,000 Bitcoin, and they'll say, okay, fine, you know, I'll charge you X, and you have an agreement written around it, of course. But you can actually do that, and it's been going on for a while. So you do have a shorting capability there. More on a sophisticated front, there are a couple companies now that actually do a stock locate type program, one in New York, actually, and they're a huge one, part of the DCG group. So they have a lending program, and they say they can find any coin you need. I've yet to really push them on that, though.
Oh, we have really professional questions from the audience. So any more questions from the audience? If not, maybe, you know, some people here might be participating in ICO projects. So perhaps we can talk a little bit about ICOs this year. Like, what's your outlook for you know, blockchain projects doing ICOs? You know, still opportunities for good projects, right?
Where's the disclaimer? I think there's way too many ICO projects, and 90% is absolute trash. Yeah, sorry if you've started.
Some people say 99%.
Sorry, yeah, I'm a bit bullish, 90%. Yeah, I mean, we see so many projects come across our desk, it's endless. Since so many come across our desk, it's literally nonstop. Some of them are white papers written on a napkin from a Choihua. Yeah, but there are some good ones though too. I'm not going to really talk about any names. I don't think it's appropriate. But you know, I think a lot of them, maybe some of the better ones, are more around like identity and whatnot, which is actually a play from last year. But it'll always be a play. You know, it's around the KYC aspect, and a couple of things I find interesting in that regard. Other ones, some more platform-based ones, sort of like an EOS or for the DApps environment. I just think there's too many, to be honest. Yeah, it's just inundated with the amount that are coming out, and you would have thought how the market is cooled, you know, that this would cool as well, but it hasn't.
We don't do any primary investing, so we don't invest in ICO projects ourselves. So that's already a huge disclaimer. And secondly, but we do come across projects because, you know, a lot of them are looking for trading services, market making, and etc. And you know, I was actually surprised to find, despite, you know, what Ryan said, there are, you know, projects that, you know, whether they succeed or not is a different story. But if you think about it, those projects are, in traditional sense, they are very, very early stage, you know, you call it company or projects, whatever, right? So the rate of success the probability of success is gonna be low anyways, because, you know, they're so early stage, right? So there are so many uncertainties down the road. But we do come across quite a number of projects that actually, you know, after they raised the money last year or this year, they're actually working hard at trying to deliver their projects, trying to deliver progress. They're actually spending the capital they raised, trying to hire good people, trying to form good team, trying to build communities, and, you know, actually trying to do things. So even though, you know, probably most of the projects right now are not gonna be successful, but you know, there are, you know, very legit teams and legit projects that are actually trying to do things, and you know, even in a cliche way, change the world.
For the ICO, I think for Ben News first. I think you're an individual investor, and you, if you can access certain ICO, unless the project is just on day one, they have to go to open for everyone, most likely you won't get a good one. So that's just the brutal truth. Because most of the good ones will go to the funds that be in the circle. They just spend day in, day out to talk to those guys, figure out who was legit, who was not, and who refers to what. And since it's so hot that it's almost impossible to get to the real public. And so by the selection, natural selection, so whatever is left over, just think about it, like if they need your money, right? No, so just think about the logic. So just maybe get more involved with your friends who are actually professional in this space, see their advice. There are good ones out there, maybe there's some chance. Some good ones, they do what KYC and then open for everyone. For example, last year, Polkadot, which I involved, was quite good, and the five coins. But that's kind of like every year changed. So that's the bad news. Do I have good news? Let me check. I think there's also increasing trends. This, so last year is basically, hey, everything should be on blockchain, right? So this one has not been done yet. Of course, we should have one. So get a bunch of people, write a white paper, so speed ads, speed serve browser or whatever. I think incrementally, just look at us, right? We are from the finance, so now we're in crypto. It's similar happened to the development. More and more projects now, when I talk to them, it makes sense. Why? Because those people in the similar industry, in the ads, in the browser, they have been there doing 4, 5 to 10 years. They just want to bring this on the blockchain. Then you will think that's probably something legit. They have done this. Why Telegram raised so much money? Because they did a project, and it works, and people love it. And that's why, should they raise that much money? I don't know. But increasingly, they're real business people. They've done these things. They understand what people want. Then they just put on the blockchain. That's probably more legit, rather than some people say, hey, you're going to revolutionize everything, and while you haven't done anything before, that's just not likely to happen. And also with the base chain development, like 1.8, 2.0, everything, I think towards the end, blockchain as a base, the base chain level, probably in 3 to 5 years, you can probably have a 5-person IT team and run a reasonable, stable base chain. And on top, you can program a smart contract to deliver those dApps. That's my prediction. So at the end, you will be real the business people who understand the customer to deliver those things, the dApps, the people you want to use. And when you use it, you don't even know it's on blockchain or not. If you do research, you will know it's on blockchain, but you don't really feel it. I think towards the end, it will be like that. But now we are quite far from that. So the advice is just to know the legit people who have done good work, good product, and they want to bring on the blockchain. Stick with those people. Because blockchain technology, to me, it's not that difficult. It's difficult, but it's not that difficult. AI is here, blockchain there. Why? Because it's open source. You don't need to be a genius to invent it. You can read that code and understand it. It's just a lot lower in terms of how you get into space. So be with the legit people who run the right business. That the problem advice.
Thank you. I'm just going to open up one last time for questions before we do our closing remarks. So if any of you have any questions, this is the last time to one more.
I'll say one more thing, going back to the regulatory issues that you touched on at the beginning, sort of the great cloud wrapping everybody's still dividing here. Jumbo, you in particular said that you couldn't imagine regulations would look like, which seems pretty aspirational, particularly having watched the Zuckerberg testimony this week. The regulators are definitely not up to speed on anything, much less the cutting edge of where the technology is. So, to use a Luddite aphorism, to a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So I think you can actually imagine what the regulation is going to look like, and it's probably not going to be business friendly from many perspectives. How robust are, I guess, the existing platforms across the spectrum to
much said what I know about regulation. I think so basically the point of problem, like if the problem looks difficult, everyone thinking about different ways, is because they don't match, right? Like if you want to regulate something, you first need to understand it and see how the logic works.
That's not gonna happen.
Like, so that's the thing, right? So kind of regulation is, hey, we have a team regulate equity and the bonds, so let's put that on top of this thing called cryptocurrency. It's just not gonna work. Just think of it, around 1550, if you put people regulate debt, put on equity, that's just not gonna work either. You have to understand what it is like and think about the logic and regulate that. The core logic here is most regulation, as mentioned, the core logic is the regulation is geographic. Maybe US is not, it's long range because US is US, right? But crypto doesn't exist geographically. That's the key problem. So you have to regulate, if you regulate it, you have to regulate the right way. You know, address it, hey, this thing exists in the cyberspace. You probably need something that's more have cyber knowledge and look into it and protect the people. It's difficult. It's really, really difficult. I can imagine is the most big project, they probably can come up together with some sort of people who really understand it. Maybe Vitalik will be on it, maybe BM will be on it. Then they look at it and say, hey, what cyberspace regulation means? Well, first they need to develop a tool first, they probably are doing it. Then people can work around that. For example, ICO, Vitalik, they do come up with a rule, say, hey, the current ICO rule is just bullshit, right? You just get the money and you can do whatever with it. So how to regulate it? You have a committee in the between, so you raise the money, then I check your schedule. So you deliver that, I give you incremental funding, right? That's a way to regulate, because they understand how this works. Then you form a committee. You cannot say, hey, so SEC, please have the private key, then you can do it. It just doesn't work. You have to understand why people do certain things. Then you look at the logic, how to break it down, like the ICO portion of it. So I believe the regulation will come within and meet in the middle somewhere. From the existing regulation, it's just very difficult. Like, it's way too different. And not to mention, there are small countries, they just say, hey, we don't do that, just come, right? Then how do you deal with it?
Well, thank you. So now I'll ask the three panelists to give closing remarks. We all want to know what the future holds. So if each of you could make two predictions of, two predictions that you're most confident about for the crypto investment space.
EOS 10,000. No. Maybe more products that are going to be available this year. Not sure how much of a prediction it is, but I'll use that as one. You know, options products built on top of futures, more futures products, and an ETF. I think that's one, because that truly will sort of enable more. More of this solid, liquid, institutional growth that we keep talking about. I do like to believe that that's going to be coming, and I'm pretty sure it's pretty easy, actually, for those companies and those exchanges to build out those products. It's time-consuming, of course, but, you know, once they sort of get the blueprint down, which they have already with two futures products, then it becomes a little bit easier. Second one.
You can have one moment to think, and then Michael, you can offer. You have some time to think, so.
My two predictions will be, number one, I think at least one of the major banks will probably get seriously involved in this space by the end of this year, I think, and even potentially provide custodian solutions, etc.
Hasn't Goldman Sachs already have a crypto desk?
I mean, they haven't confirmed it, and also having a trading desk or even some trading involvements is different from, you know, openly embrace it and provide things like, you know, custodian or, you know, institutional level services. But I think it can happen this year. Someone will take the initiative. I think a lot of them are already, you know, discussing internally, just didn't want to break the big news yet.
Barclays is one of them.
Okay, so you already know all the big news. So, you know, see, that probably confirms my prediction, you know. And secondly, I think the second one is probably, you know, a bit longer in time horizon, but I think within 3 to 5 years, it will become you know, so common for, you know, for asset managers to at least have some allocation in the asset class, and it will become the other way. Not, right now it's quite uncommon for some conservative institutions to even have any allocation in the space. I think it was in at most 5 years time, I hope it's within 3 years, all the major family offices or, you know, mutual fund, pension funds will at least have some allocation in the asset class.
So their portfolio will be like 40%, you know, fixed income and 40% stocks and alternatives, and then 3% crypto.
Yeah, I mean, it could be 3%, could be 1%, but even 1% would be already very, very meaningful in this space. Yeah.
Okay, Jianbo.
Yeah. Okay. So, actually, I will. I mentioned this one. So first one, I think the next really big crypto bull market run will be driven by the next crisis. I don't know when the next crisis, but it's probably close since last one, 2008.
It's way overdue, right?
The reason we overdue is that because the current balance sheet expansion is in public sector, not private sector. So in the previous, whatever, thousands of years, it's always private sector problems. Well, if you call Mexico private. But I think the logic goes this. To draw a parallel, in 2008, look at gold, right? So it peaked around middle of the year. Then when the crisis really happened, it bottomed around. So it went to top 1,000, then it went to 800 around maybe September time. Then it just goes straight up to 2011 to around 1900. So 800 to 1900 around. And to me, I mean, everyone can draw their own reason. To me, the reason is very simple. Because first you sell off because crisis is deflationary, so gold is inflationary, so you sell it. Then at some point you say, oh, what's central bank gonna do? Oh, they're gonna QE, and it's just, they're gonna learn from Japan. Then gold went up. Of course, QE saved the equity, depending on how you look at it. But QE almost inevitable going forward until they cannot do it. So last time they did it, gold went from 800 to 1900. Think about this time, if we do have a crisis with the bigger public sector now, how much QE they need to do to save the world, well, if they are saving the world. The size will be astronomical compared to the last one, right? It's 10 years difference. So that's first. And second, look at market cap. Gold is around 6 trillion market, around that depending on market price, 6 to 8 trillion. Crypto altogether is like 300 billion, 400 billion?
330,
depends on which day, right, and which minute. So the size of the market, think about if they have similar impact or people want to get away, put some money into that system that's outside central bank system, think how much of the impact will put on the crypto. At least the major ones, not the scam ones, right? So think about that, check my logic, see if you agree with me. This is the first one, so very clear. It will crypto might do something similar to gold in 2008 when the next crisis happens. It will have a major bull run because of the QE that we just cannot get enough of collectively. That's the first prediction. Second prediction, I mean, a lot of people, when I was in bank, I was thinking about AI and all that thing, get frustrated, like how can I get involved, stuff like that, right? I think more people, maybe not everyone of you will build a product, being in the project, build things like together. But don't worry too much about it. Like if you don't know internet, you still can benefit from internet, right? You don't know what I don't know what TCP/IP is, but I enjoy the internet. I take advantage of internet, right? Through using it or through working or whatever. And I think also that's one angle. Second angle is that I actually believe within probably 5 to 10 years, blockchain will be so common that you will feel just like internet. It's like it's online or not. And by that time, actually IP will come back. Nowadays, there's no IP. Blockchain has zero IP. So
I think I know where you're going, Jianbo. Basically, you're ultra bullish. So
no, it's actually no. It's not ultra bullish. Sorry, let me finish. What I want to say is, blockchain at the end is IP accelerator. It doesn't kill IP. So eventually, say if someone build a casino on blockchain with AI goggle everything. The final competition is who I'm playing with. Those are IPs. I want to play with a celebrity. I play with, maybe we want to play with Pokemon. Those things cannot be forked. those things were finally attractive. The rest is forkable, copyable. But things, technology not advancing that. So a lot of people put a lot of resources in, some people get rich, but at the end, all they want to do is make blockchain like air. Then what floats on the air are those IPs. So work on those IPs, know your product, do those things, eventually get used to it. Don't just say, oh, I don't know what people will work and this, that. Well, you don't know TCP IP, but you can use it. Don't worry
about it. Thank you, Jianbo. Okay, one last one from Ryan.
Yeah, so I know I said ICOs, most of them are trash, but I think I think the environment of or the whole process that ICOs go through to raise capital will become the sort of the primary way that we do raise capital, hopefully in more of a controlled, regulated manner. And I really do think that's going to sort of, it is the future already. I think the idea is fantastic. It just sort of, it got a little bit loose at times. And then actually another exchange will probably be hacked because people don't learn.
Well, thank you. Well, so I'd like to thank our three panelists for your time and for your great insights you shared with us. And thank you everyone for coming to join us tonight. I hope the talk had been useful to you. So we can enjoy a little bit networking. Enjoy the wine, please. And thank you. I'd like to meet some of you if you want to come say hi to the panelists. Thank you.